This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Progressive helps you compare direct auto rates from a variety of companies so you can find a great one, even if it's not with them. Quote today at progressive.com to find a rate that works with your budget. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Hello and welcome to This Day in Esoteric Political History from Radiotopia. My name is Jody Avergan. This day, June 22nd, 2006, the Senate Indian Affairs Committee released a report about the depth and breadth of misconduct by convicted lobbyist Jack Abramoff and ex-congressional aide Michael Scanlon. Among other things, the report called the levels of corruption astonishing, which, you know, if your scandal merits the word astonishing, given all the levels of corruption and crazy scandals in Washington, that is really saying something about your level of scandal. And the reason this report came from the Senate Indian Affairs Committee is because Abramoff was, among other things, a lobbyist on behalf of Native American tribes who were seeking to develop casino gambling on their reservations. But really, Abramoff was, I would say, mostly a lobbyist for himself and his friends. He overbilled the tribes, charging an estimated $85 million in fees. And in one case, he secretly orchestrated a lobbying campaign against his own clients to then justify them paying for his own lobbying services to counter that lobbying effort, which is very, very, very sketchy. I'm going to go ahead and say this was very, very, very sketchy. There are lots of details and tentacles and other things to discuss. And here to do that, as always, are Nicole Hemmer of Columbia and Kelly Carter Jackson of Wellesley. Hello there.
Hello, Jody.
Hey there.
And Philip Bump of the Washington Post is back, national political correspondent and author of the newsletter, How to Read This Chart. Philip, thank you for joining us for this second episode in a row. Thanks.
Of course.
And when I emailed you about joining for a couple episodes, you said, I was not around for the 1929 Reapportionment Act, but I was around for the Abramoff scandal. So do you have memories of when this broke? And were you covering it? Were you a reporter in 06 or just sort of aware?
No, it's not a report at the time. But yeah, no, it was. I was a political watcher. Is that the non-pejorative term for someone who cares too much about politics when they don't have to as their job? I was a political watcher at the time. And yeah, I mean, I think that one of the things that's sort of been lost in the midst of time was the way in which this scandal actually affected politics broadly. So people probably have heard about the Abramoff scandal. They've almost certainly seen that infamous mugshot. I'm not sure that they necessarily understand the way in which this affected things. So we talk a lot about how there was this, you know, the 2004 George Bush narrowly squeaks into re-election. Then 2006, if the House flips back to the Democrats, and then 2008, they actually expand on that, and then Barack Obama's elected, and, you know, sort of marked the beginning of the blue wave. But people forget that 2006, this was a huge thing. This was a huge aspect of American politics. Was not only was George Bush super-duper unpopular from the Iraq War, we hadn't yet gotten to the recession, which was looming, but then there was this sense that the Republicans were dirty and sketchy and that they were totally riddled with corruption. And this was really a trigger for the House being retaken by the Democrats that year, which I think sort of gets glossed over because it very quickly got subsumed into this. Obama came along and then he reshaped, you know, how people understood the Democratic Party. But 2006 was very much about the Iraq War, but also Abramoff.
Yeah. And just before we get into the details, the mugshot that you're referring to or the photo that you're referring to, this is a photo of Abramoff leaving a hearing or something. And he is wearing what I would safe to be say, like, if you Googled, like, worst thing to wear when leaving court for a corruption scandal, it would probably be like black trench coat, like 40 style gangster hat with the like wraparound brim. And it's like he decided for some reason to dress exactly like someone you would look at and be like, that person's probably up to some sort of corruption scandal.
You know, it's funny. That's actually not what I was referring to. But this is such a good little microcosm of what happened. Because you're right. It was this really very, very odd photo. I was actually talking about the delay picture. Delay mugshot, which I think Tom DeLay had been sort of caught up in the scandal. He got arrested. He had this mugshot taken. I believe he was later exonerated on the charges or found not guilty. I forget which. Historians can weigh in on that. But the mugshot is sort of famous because he leaned into it like he was getting family portraits done at Sears, right?
Like it was like his congressional photo. Green,
exactly. He had the button on his lapel. I mean, he was just like, he was aces. And it was just sort of like, look, man, if you're a politician getting a mugshot, you got a nail, dude.
Yeah,
like, you look like it's not a mugshot.
Well, your larger point, it's, you know, if you are confusing photos of corrupt Republican politicians in this era, it tells you something about the moment
that's
you're describing.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, there were all of these resignations. It was sort of like layers of scandal. And in a way, it was building off of this sense that, you know, Republicans had been in power since the revolution of 1994. And so much of that Republican revolution was premised on this idea that they were going to clean Washington up. And in fact, Newt Gingrich's approach was, we're going to make sure everyone understands that the Democratic Party is the party of corruption. And what happens? You end up having Newt Gingrich being the first Speaker of the House who is held in contempt for, who is censured by the House for his own ethics scandal. You have all of these folks resigning during the Clinton impeachment because of their own affairs. And then you have this wave of scandals in 2005, 2006 that really drive that message home that this is a party that has been corrupted by being in power too long, which really underscores the Democrats' message going into the 2006 midterms.
But the irony of that is that there is all of this corruption, and yet there's still not a lot of deep punishment. So Abram Off, you know, he goes off to prison for 6 years. He has to pay like $25 million in restitution, which 25, last I checked, is nowhere near $85 million. Yeah. And I think a lot of these politicians still get, you know, the proverbial slap on the wrist. There's no like real deep lasting consequences in terms of their livelihoods after these crimes are committed. And so the people who are left, you know, really violated and scandalized are still paying the cost for this theft that happened to Native communities.
Yeah. Another kind of, speaking of consequences, I'm curious, there's obviously Abramoff's name front and center part of this. I think, you know, there's a little understanding that he has his crew of like Ralph Reed Jr. and Grover Norquist, and I mentioned Michael Scanlon as part of this. But, you know, they were getting rich themselves, but they were also kind of throwing money around Congress. And I'm curious, like, to what extent did it feel like this scandal, did it get to a real rot among Congress? And did people who were kind of maybe 1 or 2 degrees removed, but still on the chain of the money that was flowing, pay a price at all?
Yeah, I mean, part of the reasons this becomes such a big scandal is, first of all, you have Abramoff, you mentioned Reed and Norquist. These guys had been working together since the 1980s. These were the architects, in some ways, of a modern conservative political movement. You know, Norquist goes off to become the anti-tax guy. Reed goes off to lead the Christian Coalition. And Abramoff comes back in the mid-1990s as a lobbyist. And the idea that it's not just these lobbyists, it's not just these political activists, but there's like cash trading hands between Abramoff and actual members of Congress is why this becomes such a big deal. And it exposes corruption. And yet at the same time, like, there are a lot of scandals that happen in Congress, particularly starting like maybe in the late 1970s, in which people aren't really held accountable. So the fact that some people end up having to resign, end up having to face criminal charges, end up losing their seats, that does seem like something broke through when it came to this particular scandal.
Well, I think, too, this spoke to the sort of thing that people thought was what Congress did, right? I mean, everyone always assumes that Congress only does anything because of money. That predates 2006. And so when you come into this scandal where it's like, oh, you're just throwing money at people and then they're voting the way you want. You know, I mean, like, it gets to that element of all the things that people think about Congress anyway. Oh, here we go. This proves it. Look at these jerks. I'm not sure what a lot of words I'm allowed to say. look at these unpleasant individuals. You know, but a scandal always hits harder when it actually speaks to something people assume to be true anyway.
Right. That it's not as complicated. I mean, you think about something like Iran-Contra, and not only do you have to like figure out where all these countries are, but you have to trace some pretty complex behind-the-scenes dealings. And this is just like, here's a burlap sack with a dollar sign on it. I'm handing it to this congressman. And that's a little easier to grok.
But also the narrative that, you know, these marginalized communities and traditionally oppressed peoples are always the ones that are getting, you know, their clocks cleaned by the elite and by these political officials, you know, it really like reinstates the narrative over and over again that, you know, these scandals get diminished by the fact that we care less about the people who are being harmed than we do if these people were, you know, soccer moms or, you know, white guys on Main Street.
But to your point, that's because they lack the traditional avenues to power, right?
Yeah.
The reason they reach out to Abramoff is because they don't have someone who's looking out for their interests. So this guy comes along and says, I'll look out for your interests. Like, okay, great, let's do this.
And right? That's the rub. That's the real rub. Right. It's like you're supposed to be helping and you're actively working against our interests.
And no surprise, you'll be shocked to learn that Abramoff, you know, could care less about Native American communities. There were emails that came out in the wake of this investigation where he referred to Native Americans as monkeys and troglodytes and morons. And he writes, you know, he wrote Scanlon that he said, oh, I have to go meet with the monkeys from the Choctaw Indian Tribal Council now and close the deal and so forth. So, yes.
Not great.
Not great. I think just something about, it really does hit all of the sort of worst ideas about what a lobbyist does. I mean, to me, the thing that sticks is the, other than those emails I just read, is the double dealing, you know, and the like overbilling. And there's emails where they're like, you know, we're not doing this unless it's $1.5 million, you know. And so then they're like, okay, well, we got a bill for this amount and so forth. And they're looping in law firms and all, you know, and all this stuff. I mean, we mentioned the midterms. Does that feel like... It's funny. I mean, we're having this conversation right now about kind of like what counts as accountability. And a lot of people say, well, you know, elections are there for accountability. The American people have a way to check behavior like this. Did the midterms that you described at the beginning of the show kind of feel like a substantial rebuke of this behavior? And did it in any way actually check this behavior?
I mean, it's two different questions. I think it was very certainly a rebuke. And as I said, until basically the emergence of Obama, I think it was understood as a rebuke in that context. In part, again, George W. Bush, the Iraq War was going really badly. The surge was in 2006, if I remember correctly, in that summer shortly before the midterms. But the Republicans lost the House. I mean, that was a rebuke. But that it was tied to this corruption, I think, has sort of been lost over time. And I think a lot of people don't necessarily recognize that. Did it end the behavior? Here's what I'll say. I can't say with certainty, but I would not be surprised if there were stories that emerged over the course of the next 10 years about people taking illicit contributions in exchange for votes. That would not surprise me.
That's right. Yeah. That was actually some of what Abramoff's lawyers used as their defense in a way, is that this is actually the criminalization of politics, which you also heard during Watergate. This idea that he is being charged with something that's just kind of what lobbyists do. And he certainly went much further than what was legal. But the idea that there's a real, really blurry line around between lobbying and bribes is something I think fair. I mean, there are some pretty strict rules around lobbying, but the flow of money, especially now that we have PACs and super PACs, makes it difficult to trace exactly how corrupt that system is.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, and I said earlier that he was sentenced to 6 years, but he only serves 3.5. So, you know, again, still not a whole lot of consequences for people who are committing these actions.
We should also say, so he writes a book when he gets out of jail talking about...
Was it If I Did It? Was that one?
Something very similar to that, where he's talking about, like, look, Washington is a culture of corruption. It's not just me. This is part of the waters in which I swam. But in 2020, he once again gets collared for violating the Lobbying Disclosure Act for work that he's doing on behalf of both crypto and pot projects. So he does not manage to keep those hands clean despite his mea culpa book.
Once again, incidentally, constituencies that don't really have a voice in Congress.
Yeah. Crypto and pot. Yeah, there you go. We should say that a lot of the money that, not a lot, but, you know, I would say it was probably like, it appears to be about a 2-to-1 ratio in terms of who money was flowing to between Republicans and Democrats. This is not just a Republican problem. And actually, I think like some of the Abramoff stuff, obviously Harry Reid went on to a long, very powerful career, but it did stick around with Harry Reid a little bit. And I saw a little sort of right-wing criticism when Harry Reid passed that, like, maybe, you know, he was caught up in all this and people didn't really talk about that. So yes, I mean, I think obviously this was seen as a GOP scandal, but I think in a larger sense, probably just undermined a basic faith in kind of how politics gets done. All right. Well, that brings us to the end of the episode. Philip Bump, thank you so much for doing this. And thanks for doing the last one. Thanks for joining us for 2 episodes.
You bet.
And Nicole Hammer, thanks to you.
Thank you, Jody.
And Kelly Carter Jackson, thanks to you.
My pleasure.
Radiotopia. From PR.